Welcome to Making Sense of It All with Jesse Stakes. It's hard to believe that I launched this podcast 9 months ago now. Nelson Bradshaw was my very first guest on the show, and I'm happy to be able to bring him back this week. Last time, we talked a lot about Nelson, his career, and his deep involvement in the community. So this time, I thought we'd talk a lot more about Farther and his role there as Managing Director of Bank Strategies, and what makes their offering so different in a very competitive landscape. Enjoy my conversation with Nelson Bradshaw. Let's jump right into it. It feels like this last 8 months has been really crazy, especially if you're in the financial business. Yes.
It has, you know, the markets have been operating sort of differently, especially in the investment space. Folks have sort of been looking for different strategies. And then this year you got the S&P 500 that looks like it's given a great return. But then if you dig into it, it's really only about seven stocks have been pushing that number. If you, the 12% return goes down to about 5%. So if you were doing good asset allocation, your numbers have been okay, but not great. But it's been sort of hard to figure out. And of course, we have the, you know, everyone I think is pretty set that we're having a recession. It's just how deep will it be? How do you strategize with your investment portfolio for that type situation? So
I feel like everyone was preaching a lot of doom and gloom before this year started, and it doesn't necessarily feel like we dropped off a cliff, though. It feels like we kind of, you know, we might have had a dip, but that dip isn't what some people were preaching that it was going to be. Yes?
I would agree with that. Actually, I wasn't preaching doom and gloom. I was one of those that was saying that it was going to be, in my opinion, a little bit more moderate. When you looked at the inflation numbers were coming down. Employment was still growing overall. And I do think it was taking some time for the economy to absorb. You have a 500% change in interest rates, so to speak. It's going to affect especially those businesses that are heavily reliant on capital, and real estate in particular is that way. So, you know, they got hit a little bit harder, but you know, they didn't give back all their gains. They've still had some nice, if you look at a growth trend, it's actually still been pretty nice. So
do you feel like people have stayed on the sidelines or kind of ran to the sidelines because they're unsure of what's happening? Or do you feel like people have been a little bit, you know, more comfortable getting in the water and people are jumping in and they're investing in this market, or they're putting their capital in and believing that we're headed towards, you know, a brighter future essentially?
I think there are a lot of folks that did sort of jump out to the sideline, and a lot of it was back when, you know, we were trying to approve the debt and increase the debt ceiling. And so that sort of scared them. And then they've just been hesitant to get back in. Now, you know, we preach and what we do at Farther that it's a long term game. There's been no 10-year period in which the market hasn't had a positive return. And we try not to time the market so much. Now, you know, especially if someone's putting new money into the market, we'll try and, especially in a time like this, do it more over time, dollar cost average, than go straight into the market. But in general, it will work over time.
So I think that's a great segue into actually talking a lot more about Farther, because last time you were on, we talked a lot about you. We talked about your involvement in the community, and we just kind of dipped our toe into what you're doing with Farther. Can you tell my audience what makes Farther different? Tell us a little bit about, you know, the background, the story of the company.
Well, Farther was started 4 years ago. Our two co-founders, one that's in San Francisco and one in New York, had both experienced frustration in working in two very large, well-known institutions. And they had gotten involved in some projects that required them to sort of look at the code and the platforms that they were on. And they were finding that these platforms had very antiquated technology that had just been updated. You know, they were on the 50th version of it. And when you do that, it becomes very tough to integrate, especially other things that you might want to integrate into the platform, other third-party services. So these two guys, MIT graduates, got together and said, let's build something from code, but with code first, and then start bringing on folks. A lot of the registered investment advisory firms, they'll start up and they might do build a platform, but they're so concentrated on revenue that they're trying to build a platform while they're bringing on clients. And you do much better if you start out focusing on code and then slowly bring on clients and fixing the things that are improving the things that need improving. So the first 2 years of the company were essentially building code. So it was really only in late 2021 that they started taking on financial advisors and financial advisors and clients. And so since the beginning of 2022, we've actually had hockey stick growth. We've grown 10x over that time period, and we're now the fastest growing private equity backed wealth management company in the wealth management space ever. So quite an accomplishment. We actually just did our finishing up our Series B raise. I can't really speak to what we raised and the multiples, but most folks right now, multiples of company values of cash flow have gone down. Ours actually went up dramatically. And so we continue to add on. One of the things that we've done is initially our first and foremost clients are financial advisors and their clients, but we are working toward also taking this platform and private labeling it in the institutional market, meaning other registered investment advisory firms and community banks. And so we brought one bank on a little over a year ago, and had good success with that. And so now, once we sort of work the kinks out, we're bringing on others. We have about five on the platform, and it'll grow from there.
I think that's a lot. I mean, as far as everything that's going on, you got a lot of oars in the water. I feel like what you were saying is it's really key. You know, I think about it as far as a salesperson starting a business or someone who is, you know, an infrastructure person starting a business, it's a big difference. And it's, yeah. You know, the sales guy out there will just throw a bunch of other salespeople out there, try to gain clients and then find something that works versus someone who really believes in infrastructure that's going to design the road, build the road, pave the road, and then allow somebody to drive on it. I feel like the sales guy will just tell you to drive on the dirt road sometimes and say, you'll find your way.
you're very right. We're fortunate that our two founders, you know, both of them have MIT masters from engineering degrees from MIT masters. But they also went to the sales side directly after that. So they understand what the sales side needs. And the really neat thing is we have about 12 engineers. And every week, you know, we send in anything that we come across that we think needs improving. And they work in two-week sprints in terms of project. And they almost immediately take it up and improve it. So it continues to see a lot of improvements. You know, artificial intelligence, a big conversation right now. A lot of that starting to bleed into what we do. So you know, our focus is to give financial advisors more time to be in front of clients. The average financial advisor spends 30-40% of their time dealing with back office type stuff, getting accounts open, rebalancing portfolios, and the list sort of goes on and on. Even though they have some support staff, they're still spending time doing those type things. In our environment, it drops down to about 10%. So you basically got 1/4 of your day back to spend with clients. And we've actually proven out that when an advisor comes on to our platform, they will generally see three times faster growth because they do have this extra time. And we also provide the tools. Now, it's a nice experience in the end for the end client, but I would tell you the biggest value is really what we're providing to the financial advisor to be able to do their job.
So is that because you're automating some of those tasks that they had to do manually before? How does that work as far as giving them back their time?
Very much it's automated. Anything that can be automated, we automate, as well as because it's newer technology code, we integrate so much better with other third parties. So, you know, for instance, for our financial planning software, we use Right Capital, Money Guide Pro, similar. It integrates extremely well. So you aren't having to take data from one system and then re-input it into another. It just feeds very, very easily. We have four custodians. Folks might say, well, why am I going to put my money with a company that's only 4 years old? Is it safe there? Well, the reality is we're providing the technology stack, but the money is held at a custodian. And we have four of the largest custodians in the world that we work with on our platform, Pershing, Schwab, Fidelity, and Apex. So but they integrate very well to each other. So it makes for a very smooth experience without having to do a lot of duplication of efforts.
I think that that's what you said is key. And I think that the world is changing when it comes to that, because it used to be that people looked at the company's reputation. There was an attraction to companies that were older. You found companies like Wells Fargo that would brag about the fact that they had the Stagecoach and that their company originated in the 1800s. But new is becoming attractive. New is becoming easier to deal with because, to your point, you're starting from scratch and you're building technology that exists or that's created today versus something that was made 20, 30 years ago that you have so much money invested in or you're so big that you can't get away from it. So I think that really is making it very attractive to deal with new or, smaller, faster, nimble companies.
Yeah. So we have increased our number of employees in the last year and a half from 20 to 100. We're a complete, since we were basically built during the pandemic, we are a complete remote environment. So any financial advisor in any market, if they want to join our platform, we're able to set them up remotely and we'll get them some office space if they want office space and the other tools that they need. But one of the things I also like about it is, every advisor sort of has a different client base generally, okay. Different, and they need to be able to go to market in a little bit different way. And our platform provides that. We provide a lot of marketing tools for them to go do that and a marketing budget as well for them individually. To do that, but you're really your own little P&L. I mean, we'll tell you up front, you're going to get 50% of the revenue that you bring in, up to $500,000 in revenue, and then over that you'll get 75% revenue. So if you have $100 million portfolio, you're probably going to average around 65% of that. And
not a bad living.
That's not a bad living, especially when you look at it compared to the wirehouses. They're probably only getting 35%, and they're basically being, those shops are being run more by attorneys and compliance folks than they are folks that are trying to get out there and do business. And so we take compliance seriously, but we're very fast and nimble and working through those issues. So. As I think I historically, and my partner, Daniel Gillum, we historically have worked primarily with business owners.
Sure.
And, but we have other folks that might focus on, doctors and attorneys as a class, or folks that are in the C-suite, or sports personalities, that kind of thing. And so our platform really allows them to sort of figure out how they want to go to market. And they own that book of business, really. We don't have non-competes like the other organizations. We figure our technology and our systems are good enough. They're going to want to stay once they get here. So we aren't worried about that.
That's a nice vote of confidence that you guys put in yourself as well. So let's switch gears for a second. You had mentioned that you guys are looking to white label to some community banks and other financial institutions. Tell me a little bit about that. I know that, you know, investment income is huge. I mean, it's for any institution. I mean, if you've got non-interest bearing income that's coming in, then it's incredibly valued to a financial institution. So you guys are offering something that they may not want to put together themselves.
Right. Well, you know, you can go out there and start your own registered investment advisory or broker dealer yourself. But most folks don't realize just what a challenge it is to work with the various custodians out there and to set that up, the compliance and all that. And we take that off of them. Again, not only are we a registered investment advisory firm ourselves, so we have folks on our platform every day that are using it and telling us what needs are, you know, they have and changes to be made. So we're getting sort of direct feedback on the fly to improve the system overall. But we can really allow a bank or independent registered investment advisory firm to get started with really just focusing on the sales part and not having to focusing on the other parts. So we can do it in terms of either a revenue share, and we actually provide the salesperson. We think it works better when they have the salesperson. We'll help them hire the financial advisor. And then because they tend to be more indoctrinated into their organization. And, you know, with a bank environment, that's what really makes it work is the cross referrals that you get from doing that. So we've been able to show some pretty good success there.
No doubt. Well, and it allows them to fill a gap. I mean, if they're missing a piece of that organization, or if they're missing a product line, that will definitely drive revenue. And it also, to your point, it allows them something that might be the entry point to a client. That might be the most important part that a client needs right now. 6 months down the road, a year down the road, they might need a commercial loan. They might need something on the business side. Now that you've already hit, now that you've connected those dots that they, for their first need, you might have the opportunity on the second need.
Certainly. And, you know, if anyone that's been in the banking industry knows that one of the key things they look at is the cross-sell ratio. And this helps with that. It gives them, and it also gives folks, one more reason to talk to a prospective client or a client. You know, in community banks, they don't have the product set of the big bank. So they go and talk to them a couple of times about different things. And then, well, I want to continue to have touch points with this client, but what am I going to talk to them about now? So this product set gives another touch point. One of the other things that's folks like about it is we don't have proprietary products that we're selling. And I tell folks all the time, you give me someone that's with one of the broker dealer types, especially they're a statement that someone has $2 million invested and give it to me without the name. I can usually tell you who it's with because they've got a lot of their internal products that they've pushed because they get the internal fees on top of the external fees. And so we feel like that our platform and registered investment advisors in generally are more of a fiduciary than you might see in another model, because RIAs are only paid as a percentage of assets managed. They are not paid on individual transactions.
Very good. I feel like, you know, I think people were afraid of technology, especially people that were, you know, small business owners, people that were blue collar by nature. But what I see bearing out a lot of the times is that technology is really allowing small businesses to compete with larger businesses, because it's allowing that price point. It's allowing the barriers to entry to lower. And it's kind of doing the opposite. It's actually helping those small businesses. It's not something to fear. It's actually something to embrace. It's something to be thankful for.
Certainly, that's the case in a lot of situations. In our particular field, the end client, that's the client of the financial advisor, though, the technology really isn't as big of a deal because, you know, they do tend to be the folks that have money are generally older because they've accumulated wealth over time and tend to not be as technology forward, but they don't have to be. Our financial advisors, again, we're giving our financial advisor support through technology. And so, you know, we can, with those folks, we can remote screen share and take them through the financial plan and the cash flows and talk through that. Our system automates, even if you don't have, even if you have accounts elsewhere other than Farther, we have a feed that goes into, I'm going to call it a living balance sheet that every day it updates with the numbers. So it's not like you, a lot of institutions, they'll print out a PDF that shows your plan, you put it in a folder, and 3 months later, it's out of date. Well, ours is every time you go in there, it's updated with current numbers. And so what Farther has managed to do that others before them have not is I feel like we've done the best job of marrying technology with people.
Right.
Because, you know, 10 years ago, the big thing was these robo-investing platforms. And one of our private equity firms, Bessemer, was a big investor in that area. And what they found was once folks got a little bit of money, say $500,000 or so, and a little bit of complexity, they sought advice from an individual. Mm-hmm. So those didn't provide that. And then you had on the other side, they had invested in registered investment advisory firms that were doing what I would call roll-ups. They take one firm and then they merge in another firm, and they hope that they get economies of scale. Well, they didn't change the technology. They might have wrung out some of the expense on the administrative side, but it really doesn't improve for the financial advisor and the end client, their experience. And so what we felt like that we've done, and one of the reasons that we are backed by such prestigious names, is we've been able to marry the technology with the people to provide what we feel is the best overall experience.
So let's talk about that for a second. You mentioned in the beginning of this that you guys are utilizing AI. Being that you guys are kind of marrying up that customer experience and utilizing technology, how are you using AI to better that customer experience?
Well, I'll tell you, Jesse, we're a little early into that, but part of what we do is we have a document vault as part of our platform where you can go in and you can put your trust documents, your tax returns, various things in various folders. And you can give them different folks access. So your CPA might have access to a certain set of folders. Certain family members might have access. So it's a way to keep everything centralized and someone not having to go, well, where do you keep it in that drawer, you know, in his office and that kind of thing. But part of what we do as financial advisors is help folks with their overall financial plan. It's not just about an investment strategy. And part of that is dealing with risk elements. So their insurance policies, on the life insurance, who are the beneficiaries, and are they similar across the board for all their policies? Or did they get this one 20 years ago and then they had, you know, another child, and their newest one, they have the child included, but they don't own the older one. So there are things like that, policies for property and casualty and whatnot. You usually have sublimits and master limits and then an umbrella policy. So what we're not quite there yet, but where we're going to get is using artificial intelligence to scan all those documents and provide the financial advisor a list of things to discuss with the client, like, you know, did you know that your beneficiaries are different here and over here? Was that intentional or was that just sort of a mistake? Do you understand that your master liability policy says that all your individual policies, like for your house or your car, need to have limits of 300,000 and they provide an umbrella of 2 million? Well, you know, it will find that, well, no, this one policy, it's only 100,000. So okay. It helps with a lot of the sorting through the data, and especially for younger financial advisors who are still learning their craft, because in this industry, financial advisors have starting out have a very low success rate. And generally, only 3% of those that go through any kind of training program make it. And making it 3 years later, they're making $80,000 in commissions or more. So it's something that we think that will help improve those odds.
Well, and as I'm hearing you talk about this, the other thing that I'm hearing is that's another way that you're going to give back your advisors their time. Because right. As you can automate some of these things that are very meaningful, but they take time to sort through policies and to look for dates. And if you're not doing it, you're doing your client a disservice. But if you are doing it, it's costing you a tremendous amount of time analyzing those documents and making sure that you're fully prepped for those meetings. So that's invaluable. I think that those are things where artificial intelligence really does, it truly does add to the customer experience, and it adds to the value that that financial advisor is able to give within that meeting or just in the overall relationship. So that's excellent.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got some people that'll, you know, they fancy themselves intelligent. They think they want to control their own money. Do you guys offer self-directed options as well? Or is it if they're dealing with farther, then their money is going to be managed by an advisor?
Well, we certainly take a lot of input. Those folks that want to do self-investing and want to call up, you know, their broker every couple of weeks and say, hey, I think I might be interested in buying that, this or that.
Mm-hmm.
Those in general are not a good fit for us. And we have that conversation up front. You know, we are interested in folks that truly want to do financial planning, and not just the planning. It's amazing, Jesse, how many folks will do that plan, but then they don't take that plan and go through the steps to actually implement it. So we have that conversation up front. Now, that's not to say there's some folks that have a good bit of money and they say, you know, I have this pot of money I just want to play with. And
right.
We'll tell them, yeah, we understand that. Well, you know, why don't you just go there? There are plenty of discount firms out there that you can use for that type model, a Schwab or someone. And you do that money and let us deal with what's more in the longer term strategy and whatnot. And we'll take into consideration what you're doing there. Again, we can take that feed from where they're doing that investment, and we can make sure that they're not getting overly concentrated in one area by accident. And educate them, you know, maybe on the tax consequences of what they're doing, you know, with those funds, how that might be impacting things. So, that, you know, but someone that just constantly wants to have a conversation about should I buy this or buy that, not a good fit for us. And you know, there are folks out there that do that, and they're very successful.
No doubt. Nelson, before we wrap up, if I've got financial advisors that are listening to this, or if I've got people that are involved at a leadership level of a community bank or other financial institutions, and they're interested in learning more and potentially partnering with you, how can they find you?
The easiest way is just to email me. It's a very simple email, Nelson, NELSON, at farther.com, FARTHER, as in we'll take you farther financially. And I promise you, I'll get back to you within 24 hours, if not sooner.
Excellent. And then on the flip side, if it's a client that's listening to this, and if they're interested in potentially investing their money through Farther, should they contact you as well? Or how should they get in touch with Farther?
Yes, they can contact me as well at Nelson@farther.com. And I'll have a preliminary discussion with them and sort of find out who I think might be the best fit for them as a financial advisor. And we'll get them set up with a preliminary discussion there and see how it goes from there.
Excellent. Nelson, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's been great. And as always, I hope I can have you back on again in the not too distant future.
It's always a pleasure, Jesse. Appreciate it.
So before we wrap up today, I just want to reiterate a couple of things. Change is happening all around us. We've talked about it in multiple industries, multiple segments of this economy. you know, everyone we've talked to over the last 6 months has talked about AI. They've talked about automation. They've talked about augmented reality, all kinds of things. And I'll tell you, I don't know if they're all good or all bad or just simply neither. Some of it has just changed and it's just evolving based on the technology that's available today versus what was available yesterday. I think there's a lot of things that we talked about today that are going to help financial professionals get their time back, as well as drive efficiency and effectiveness with their communication with their clients, and therefore they're going to have a better customer experience because of those things. You know, all of these systems that we talk about, it's that old adage, garbage in, garbage out. If you don't have somebody on the backside managing these systems so that they are operating at an optimal level, then they can become a hindrance and not a help to your clients and to yourself. I think Nelson and his team at Farther do an excellent job of putting the professionals that they partner with in a great spot to focus on their clients and focusing on giving them good advice rather than having to worry about managing systems in the background. If you're a financial professional yourself, or if you manage a group of them and you have any interest in talking with Nelson about Farther and about what they can do for you, please reach out to Nelson directly, or I'm happy to make an introduction if I can. That's going to wrap me up for today. I'll catch you guys next time.